Marini's Media.
Hello, everyone. Look at me all set to talk romantically about the last time Forest graced the Premier League in 98-99, going all Dave Bassett. And then, well, the Championship of 2020 happened. And Charlton. This is the Totally Football League show where no one wants to go up automatically. 1999 and the Wenger boys were all boom, boom, boom. I was still at school. Sam Parkin, I think you were tearing up as a trainee at Chelsea, were you not, in 1999?
Hammersmith Palais every Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, ready to be loaned out to other palais that were available. Adrian Clarke was contemplating a little spell at Carlisle United.
I don't want to talk about that one.
Very small spell. And Joe Crilly from William Hill wasn't old enough to bet, but his beloved Bolton were... just relegated.
Were they?
Yeah, back in the First Division. Good years, 1999. We are back from Miami. Well, me and Joe, don't like to brag, with the corker of the show. We've got Nigel Clough on the way. He talks about his future, the club's future. What else have we missed since we were last here? Myself and Joe, anything you'd like to tell us about?
Probably two of the best shows since the podcast's been running,
I'd say.
Last
time we were here.
Yeah, Matt Davis had us was really funny.
He's been on fire, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh,
he
has so been very funny. I mean, he's brilliant, isn't he?
And that posh bookie, outstanding, wasn't she? She has been sensational.
You're right, Joe, how are you? Miami, then. Should we just brag about that for a bit?
It looks like you forgot your sun cream, mate. You're looking a little bit pink.
Well, it was very warm, very hot. What, 26, 27 degrees?
I don't know. I was working, Joe.
I was a little bit hot when old J-Lo came out, Joseph, I'll tell you that much.
Does all her own tricks, doesn't she? I watched that film on the way over, Hustlers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not a fan of it, really. But she does have great core strength. There is my Super Bowl review done. Onto the Championship.
You're listening to the Totally Football League show in association with William Hill.
The Championship then, and will the real promotion candidates stand up? It was a draw between Leeds and Brentford, plus Nottingham Forest were shocked by Charlton. Big wins for Blackburn, draws for Swansea QPR, Wigan 2-2 with Middlesbrough, and it's 3-3 for Scott Hogan as Barnsley slumped to 9 points from safety, losing at home to Birmingham. That's Tuesday done. Wednesday could change everything, so insert your own Wednesday words of wisdom here. Tuesday evening's results, only one place to start. The big winners were those that did not play, Adrian Clarke, Sam Parkin, West Brom and Fulham. After Brentford won, Leeds won. You were there, Sam, and it was beyond or below expectation.
We probably would have anticipated me sitting here saying what a great advert for Championship football. The whole nation saw just how competitive this division is, but I thought it was all a bit meh, to be honest, especially the second half. I thought the pace of the game, the tempo in the first period was sensational, really, but it was littered with errors.
Work it back to the defence and back to square one. Oh, Casillas missed that! Oh, and that's gifted on a plate from Benrahma.
It's Harrison who takes it. In it goes. Reyes missed it! Chance for Leeds!
Yes!
Leeds United equalise, and it's Liam Cooper's first goal of the season, and what a time to get it! Chaos from the corner.
I haven't seen Brentford that sloppy with the ball. Trying to play out for a long time. They gave the ball away in real dangerous areas, the fullbacks in particular. But I thought it was, in the whole, a night of recovery for Leeds. I thought they were the better side, should have won the game. And I thought the midfield were brilliant, especially Calvin Phillips, who gave a sensational individual performance. And we probably wouldn't be talking about Leeds having this horrendous time if Calvin Phillips had remained available.
Yeah, that's pretty true. How did the pressing go? Because I've seen them in the first half of games be brilliant, go man to man and absolutely swarm all over teams and then fade. Did they manage to maintain it through the 90 minutes or not?
No, absolutely that. I thought the starting positions from the first whistle of Harrison and Costa in particular proved very problematic for Brentford to play through that. And yeah, the man for man thing was really in evidence last night. I just felt it was with the ball where the central trio of Phillips, Click and Hernandez just had the upper hand over Brentford from the first whistle, to the extent where they actually just sat off Calvin Phillips in the second half and just created a line of three and allowed him to have it in deep positions where he couldn't really hurt Brentford. But in the first half, the movement of Click and Hernandez in particular just pushed Brentford back, further back, where their midfield couldn't have any impact on the game. They were the better side, And it was a night where Brentford's front three for once just didn't click into gear. So I think a night of recovery for Leeds, and maybe a night for the nation just to calm down a little bit on the Brentford front, because we've been guilty of it as well.
It's funny, we had a little chat beforehand and we said if that front three of Brentford was playing for Leeds, then Leeds would be already writing Premier League next to their name, wouldn't they? But of course that's the way. Although, are you surprised that there hasn't, or there wasn't more of a shift to try and address that issue up front for Leeds during January and what we've seen before?
I'm not surprised, because it's Bielsa, isn't it? It's just little changes here and there.
And
and even with his substitutions, we've been over it time and time again. Last season, this season, minimal changes. I think he's got a big decision to make over the keeper, hasn't he? I mean, he's had a shocking week. Kiko Casilla, he's cost them at Forest, he cost them a win last night at Griffin Park. I would change it based on, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Meslier, the kid who played against Arsenal, but I thought he was really good in the FA Cup game against the Gunners. And I mean, how much worse can it get, really, for Leeds? His confidence is shot, I think.
It's funny you say that, because, sorry, Sam, but Lee Camp, the change was made, you know, he dropped Lee Camp, didn't he, Birmingham, and he brings him back in, Pep Clatet, and they've won 6, drawn 3, lost none, 4 penalty saves, 2 clean sheets, 1 assist. Is it all about the mentality of the keeper? So you've got to be strong enough that if that drop happens, to come back in with something to prove, as Lee Camp has done?
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, he has to take him out of the firing line now. It's not to say he won't play again this season and be important potentially in a playoff campaign, but Meslier, that played at Arsenal and was fantastic, his distribution anyway, in the first half. He's on the bench tonight. Something has to give. I mean, I'm a little bit reluctant to really criticise Bielsa in terms of the way that they play, because he is the godfather, according to so many of the managers. But I think he has to take a little bit of criticism, just because he plays the same way, more or less. Yes, with the ball, it is sensational at times. But the input of Costa and Harrison, for example, has not been good enough. They've not been scoring enough goals. They've not been taking that burden off Patrick Bamford. And last night, I thought in the first half, they were a little bit higher and held their positions, and they had a bit more of an attacking threat. But we're still talking about the same thing this morning, and we don't know the finances at the club. In an ideal world, they would have had the money to go and get Ivan Toney, Lyle Taylor, even Naki Wells, I think, for 4 or 5 million to just give them that push this season. So they're questions that the Leeds supporters are completely within their right to be asking, because with that striker, they get promoted, I think.
Rob M asks, when Benrahma being linked with a number of Premier League clubs, do you think he has what it takes to make an impression at the top level? I haven't seen much of him this season, but after watching him on Tuesday against Leeds, I felt he was guilty of being very sloppy in possession, says Rob M via Twitter.
Rob's pretty much hit the nail on the head in terms of last night's performance. He would produce a little nutmeg and get the crowd off their seats. And then the next time he'd receive the ball, he'd give it away in a really dangerous area. And he was guilty in the first half. I've criticised the fullbacks. Rico Henry, I thought, was poor for an hour last night, and Dalsgaard. Benrahma was guilty in the same way, just being over-elaborate in his own half. And with that aggressive press and the energy that Leeds have, got himself into some really difficult situations. But to answer the first part of the question, yeah, I think someone will take a punt on him. I think he is good enough to go to a team, not a team probably challenging for the European positions, but certainly a team in the middle of the table. We'd add something to those squads.
He's 100% good enough for the Premier League. He will frustrate on occasion. It's as simple as that. You get that with a lot of these maverick flair players, don't you? You just have to look at the end product. Now, there are a lot of players like Sir Benrahma that look like him but don't score goals or assists, but just look flashy. And in the case of them, I would be really wary. But he marries it with end product. 24 goal involvements last year, 10 goals, 14 assists. He's got 9 goals, 5 assists this year. I think he would score goals and make goals in the top flight, no problem.
Yeah, very much like Pat Mahomes, hey Joe? Nottingham Forest 0, Charlton Athletic 1. We expected to roll into this and talk about Forest going up. Lamucci got his team selection wrong, didn't he?
Well, he got 2 decisions wrong. That was to try and give the fullbacks a rest. Well, he did give the fullbacks a rest, which was really poor, I think, especially having witnessed the reverse fixture at the Valley, where 45 minutes Nottingham Forest did not get a kick. So for him to underestimate Lee Bowyer's side last night is really poor, I think, on the back of such a morale-boosting victory over Leeds. Charlton, on the face of it, have been having a really poor time, but they have got a lot of their better players back now. Let's not get away from that. Cullen's back. Davis has come in. Taylor, Hemed, the front two. Ostermer, you know, they're looking more like the team from the start of the season. So for him to underestimate that, I think he's got it badly wrong last night.
He said that Sam Bissau had a niggle, that Graben had a knee problem, Abiobi not quite right. We have to believe him on that. But if you've got those three key players that you don't want to risk, you don't then add to it by resting the fullbacks. I mean, it's one of those, even if you want to, it's like, hang on, I've got three players that I think I need to rest. I'll stick everybody else the same. I think it was a little bit arrogant of Lamouchi last night. He definitely took liberties with Charlton and he paid the price. Great goal, by the way.
Naby Sarr intervenes. Early ball in. And it's Taylor! 1-0 Charlton! What an excellent goal that is as well. Lyle Taylor celebrates his ninth of the season.
Love the cross. I'm not a massive fan of Naby Sarr. I think he's been a bit dodgy defensively this season. But the cross was magnificent, as was the finish from Lyle Taylor. So well done. Well done, Charlton. It was the kind of game Forest don't like. They had most of the ball, I think 57% possession. It's just not their kind of thing, is it? No. They want to play on the counter like they did against Leeds. So no, it's a learning evening, I think, for Lamouchi. I think Forest fans won't forgive him if he does it again. It's one of those, you say, you've been brilliant, we'll let you off for this one, don't do it again.
He'll have sat in the office, probably not Sunday, when was the Leeds game? Saturday evening, so Sunday and Monday morning before training. This won't have been done on a whim. They'd have probably looked at the statistics, they probably would have looked at videos of Charlton, and he's made a risk, a calculated risk, and it's backfired, really. He'd have thought, who needs a rest? We can't risk the injured players. We should be able to beat Charlton at home with a couple of the fringe players. And it looks a little bit silly this morning.
And I think it reminds us again that they didn't do enough work with the strikers in January. Like Tyler Walker, we're all fans of him. League One, he was brilliant. But to have him as the next in line to someone like Lewis Graben, I think it's a big ask for him, big step up. And I would have imagined he would have been third choice striker. I know that Amiobi can do it, but yeah, for him to be number two, not enough, I don't think.
We don't know, right? And as fans, we sat there, I don't know if you do this, Joe, and you think, why is he giving him a rest? Why is he not playing? And yes, Lamouchi afterwards talks about getting some of those decisions wrong. As a player, both of you, were you ever pulled and told to have a rest during a season? Or is there a point where you stick your own hand up and say, you know, or is it the fact we're so driven by stats now and how much everyone's running or not running or not doing? And
it's changed, but invariably, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you'd have been given a rest in the cup games. And I mean, it's a different conversation about the cup competition's been devalued. We've seen it more and more now, but in the league games, no. Me and Adrian just been speaking off air, different league, but look at Sunderland at the moment. It's the same team every week. It's the same team every week. And the conversation will probably crop up in a few weeks' time that some of these lads need a rest. Well, you know, not for me. If they're producing week after week, wrap them in cotton wool, don't train. Don't train. That was the thing for me. You know, if we were being asked to do quite strenuous sessions amongst these games, that's when players have got a problem. Get them to go and have a little swim, give them some time away from the place with the family, afternoon in the jacuzzi. You're ready to go again.
That's good management. When you just recognise someone needs a breather, just give them two or three days off in the week, Monday to Wednesday. Just say, no, I don't want to see you till Thursday. You switch off mentally, take your family away, pop into the leisure centre, have a dip or something. But yeah, it's...
I was there with you then, weren't you?
Off. But you can literally... It's nice to have a feel of the ball maybe and the feeling of hitting the back of the net. I used to like that maybe on a Friday before the game, but you can walk through the majority of your tactical work. And when there's so many games coming in close proximity and we're getting towards the real business end of the season, you need your time away and you need your recovery. And The team, if they're flying and they've got momentum and they're full of confidence, keep picking the same side.
It's not that the people who came in for the fullbacks were poor.
No.
It's just that they're not match sharp. They're not in tune in the same way as the guys that play every week.
That bit of elastic between them. On to the fixtures then. Wednesday night fixtures age us all, so we won't talk about those. But why are the fixtures this weekend across the EFL interesting? Interesting. Well, because they correspond with the opening weekend's fixtures. So they should be a good measure of how teams have progressed, regressed, or indeed just grest, which sadly it turns out it's not a word. Hull Swansea, Friday night football's back. Hasn't been away. We've had a run of them of late. Who wants to look at this one?
Well, I'm happy to discuss Hull. The good problems, big problems. Yeah. The morale is so low because they've lost their two star players. I think that the uneasy truce between the manager and the ownership and the fans is kind of gone now because of the decision to sell the star assets, and to exacerbate the problem, 12 players injured, most of them defensive players. And I think that came back to bite them last night, battered by Blackburn Rovers. I know that Sam saw Blackburn against Fulham at the weekend. By all accounts, it could have been anything. It was 3-0. So no, there were real problems. Most of his first choice defence are out. I'm not sold on the goalkeeper. He made a mistake again last night, George Long. So I think that's an area that they might need to look at long term. But yeah, now Hull have got real problems. The only saving grace for them ahead of this game is that Swansea aren't exactly flying.
Yeah, there's a little bit of news that Kane's going to miss the rest of the season as well. Herbie Kane's going to miss the rest of the season.
Oh, we love Herbie Kane.
we love Herbie.
Last season.
On Madison as well, I think Hull fans have already seen both sides of Marcus Madison. I think with Grzycki and Bowen, you always got industry and in product. They were workers as well as the star men.
Yeah.
With Madison, I just think he's a bit, is enigmatic the right word? He's a bit flaky. At the weekend on his debut, brilliant by all accounts, definitely their best player at Ewood Park. Really wasteful, trying Hollywood passes. They weren't coming off. And that, I think, is the difference. They've sold guaranteed end product and they've got themselves someone that will deliver, but certainly not every week.
Quick word, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, if Blackburn are beating Hull City 3-0, Hull City must be in pretty desperate state, because I thought Blackburn were pretty woeful against Fulham at the weekend. But yeah, looking ahead to this one, Swansea last night against QPR, not a shot on target. And having recruited Brewster, very talented young player, and obviously Conor Gallagher, who was one of the players of the first half season in the Championship, you would say. He's not scored a goal since he's gone there. And last night, playing quite deep alongside Matt Grimes. And I think that just shows you that, as much as I like Matt Grimes, I played alongside him, they're missing a real aggressive midfield player, Swansea, which would allow Grimesy to do what he does best and allow Conor Gallagher to go and play up higher. Far too deep last night in that game. And I just think having all that pressure on those young players' shoulders to get the goals, to get them in the playoffs, is going to prove too great.
Good point.
And I imagine that Swansea are going to miss out this season. And it's almost now or never for them. They need to be winning those types of games against Hull City.
We'll get the odds from Joe in just a minute on promotion from the Championship. But West Brom Forest, given all that we've just said about Nottingham Forest and Lamucci and who he did or didn't pick, well, they've had their chance to rest then.
Yeah, we'll see how fit these guys are, won't we? I would imagine they'll all be back for this game. It's a huge one, isn't it? But they've lost two of the last three. I know they beat Leeds Forest, but they were beaten, weren't they, by Birmingham on the road. So the momentum has sort of been checked, no doubt about that. And I just think West Brom have had a great January, really do. I think they did terrific business in their recruitment. With Robinson, Grzycki and Peltier, Championship ready, aren't they? So
was that almost as important as the couple of wins they just had as well? You know, the recruitment.
It was a really professional performance, wasn't it, at Millwall? It could have been one of those days, wasn't it, with the storm, Cara, where the fancy dance of West Brom might roll over
I think if people haven't been across what Gary Rowett's done in his first few weeks and months at Millwall, you would have been rubbing your hands together and expecting Millwall just to batter West Brom. Yeah. Play good football now, Millwall, and it was to their detriment in those conditions because West Brom nicked the ball off them.
But even so, they're the team with the stars in the Championship, West Brom, and Yeah, we've all played in teams where you just sometimes don't really fancy it. The weather's not very nice.
Really?
It's an ugly game. Yeah, definitely. Well, you don't deliberately not fancy it.
No, but do you look around the dressing room beforehand and think, no one's really...
No, you can tell after 10 minutes.
I had the game on Sunday morning and my girlfriend was going, it's dangerous. Got to be off. It's ridiculous. It's like, well, I think she wanted me to put Sunday brunch on.
Is that still on? Goodness me.
It goes on for 7 hours, that does. That's your whole Sunday.
I think that told us a lot about the Baggies, and I think they might back it up with a victory against Forest. They've got an embarrassment of riches in the wide areas and in attacking midfield positions. Bilic has reunited Bartley and Ajayi at centre back, as we've I think sort of banged on about for a while now. And I don't think it'll be smooth pathway to the Premier League, but they're probably the safest of any bets at the moment.
So who goes up with them then, Joe? Are you backing up West Brom going up automatically?
Yeah, they're the favourites for promotion at 1-4. Leeds, despite the run that they're currently on, are 2-7, but I think just before we went away they were 1-12. So 2 weeks ago they were 1-12 for promotion, they're now 2-7. Brentford are 4-5 third favourites for promotion. Imagine if Fulham get a result at Millwall tonight, they may well go above them. They're currently 5-4 fourth favourites, and Forest a little way back at 4-1.
I wonder how that may or may not change whatever happens with the West Brom Forest game. Odds on that one too?
West Brom are odds on favourites to win. They are 4-5 for the victory. Nottingham Forest 7-2. So if you think that the players being rested in midweek for Forest will have a positive outcome, then that might be a bit of a tempter for you with the draw 27-10.
And the odds on Hull Swansea.
Ooh. On Friday.
0-0.
Well, I mean,
for you,
what was that last
Thank
night?
You.
QPR Swansea.
0-0.
That was absolutely terrible. I saw the first half of that. That was.
I just had the reporter down the line from Swansea, and every time we went to him, he was saying someone's tripped over the ball. There's a crisp packet circling above head. Someone's just gone down to the concourse for a wee. Didn't sound good.
Not even the prospect of another pint in the pub could keep me watching that game.
So odds on a game breaking out then between Hull and Swansea.
Exactly. Well, the draw's 5-2, which is quite a short price for a draw. Hull at 9-4. One of my mates is a Blackburn fan, actually. He was texting me last night saying Hull were the worst team that he's seen this season play Blackburn, with Swansea 6-5 to win away from home.
Well, Joe, looking forward to that one.
Can I just ask Joe, do you expect any human beings to bet on Leeds United at 2-7 for promotion? Genuinely, do you think that you would take money on that?
No, absolutely not. No,
you need to change the odds then.
I think at the moment, even if there were, I think you'd be struggling to find people to back them at even money.
Right.
Yeah. I'm still devastated we didn't lump on Mitrovic to be top scorer all those months ago.
Thank God.
Neck and neck now, isn't it?
This and much more to come. The Championship looking swell then. Up next, the wonderful world of League One.
Get great offers every day with William Hill. Join today and get £30 in free bets when you bet £10 using the promo code C30. Whether you like great prices, free bets, or in-play scoreboards, William Hill has you covered. William Hill is who you play with. Promo code C30, new online customers only. Minimum £10 stake, win only. Minimum odds 1-2. Free bets paid as free £10 bets, 30-day expiry. Free bet payment method, player and country restrictions apply.
Peterborough have moved into the automatic promotion places in League One. Another impressive win. Coventry kept up the pace with an 84th minute winner against Portsmouth. The sack race pointing out about Posh. 6 League One wins on the spin, 64 goals scored into the automatics. And Darren Ferguson's Peterborough firing on all cylinders. The country's top scorers looking for that fourth promotion under the Scot. Elsewhere, Bolton nabbed the wonderfully named Tobias Phoenix as their head of footballing operations. So the Wanderers very much will be ruled by the Order of the Phoenix. Just for you, Joe,
very
a Harry
good.
Potter joke. And Free the Shrimp. Nile Rangers offered to come back and play for Southend for free, saying he owes it to the fans.
Nah, don't bother, Nile.
No?
Nah.
Not even for free?
No.
No. He spent, of course, 10 weeks in prison at His Majesty's pleasure. when the Shrimpers were last with him and they were last together. But 10 goals in 49 games for the Blues, regularly fined, though, for poor timekeeping. Who wins out that one? And Marcus Mumford is a proud Womble. Brilliant, the work that the Dons are doing with their loan system. We'll have plenty more on that in the weeks to come. Tuesday night then, Coventry 1, Portsmouth 0, Wickham 0, Fleetwood 1, Wimbledon 0, Ipswich 0. The three games we'll focus on. Either of you want to go to any of those?
I wouldn't mind talking about Coventry. I mean, tipped them for automatic promotion just a couple of weeks ago. And I think that even the Portsmouth fans in the wake of this game were saying the same thing, like, but Coventry look a good bet. In this game, by all accounts, it was a fairly ugly match and conditions weren't great. The pitch is starting to get a bit bobbly at St Andrews. And I'd like to give Mark Robbins and ADV Vash a bit of credit here. I think they tailored their team selection to the conditions. I don't know if you've experienced this before as a player, Sam, where you don't always see the best players or the best 11 out there, but you look at it and you think, hang on, this one's going to be a really scrappy game, so we'll take out one or two of the sort of creative talents. And it was just...
It's funny how simple that sounds, but how many managers don't do that?
Oh, yeah, loads won't think to do it. But I think that might have been what happened here. Westbrook and Shipley were on the bench. You had the strikers as well. Godden came off the bench to score. Biamu was sub as well. That's four excellent players to have in reserve, and just by all accounts, they defended brilliantly. McFadzean, again, really good with Higham at the back. And the wing backs, the one that's caught my eye is the right wing back, Fankati Dabba. I think he's been really good this season, always seems to contribute going forward. And I think he was good defensively. And of course, on the other side, McCallum is the boy that's been signed by Norwich and loan back, so he's clearly got a lot of talent. So now look, everything's rosy for Cov, and this is a massive win against a Portsmouth team that I think had been unbeaten in 9. So yeah, good times for the Sky Blues.
We're going to hear from Nigel Clough in just a bit, talking that 2-2 with Burton and Oxford United. A quick word on Peterborough though, Sam.
Yeah, the other form side at the moment. I mean, you have to look at the results. Doesn't take an idiot. Scored 4 in the last 3 games and reshuffled the system, spoke about it a couple of times. They lost at Wimbledon narrowly, and since then changed the formation to this 3-4-3, and they've pretty much resoundingly beaten everyone in their way. And Szmodic, I just scratch my head as to why he couldn't be affecting things at Bristol City at the moment. He's been that good creatively for Peterborough since he's gone there, goals and assists. And that's something that severely looked to be lacking at Bristol City for large portions of this season.
There will be those that will say, oh, 4-0 Southend.
Yeah, but 4-0 against Oxford, 4-1 against away at Ipswich. I just think he's a talented little player. They've called Patterson back Bristol City from his loan at Derby. He's had an effect, but Szmodic is that type of player. Last night, 2 defenders missing. So I thought that Southend would have not a chance of winning the game, but it may be a tighter affair. And the players that came in last night for Peterborough, it was Mason and Bennett and Beavers was the back three. Nathan Thompson suspended. Another comfortable victory. And Ivan Toney is running away with a golden boot in that division. And for my money, he's been the best player at that level by a considerable distance.
The only difficulty to factor into everything when we get the promotionals from you, Joe, in just a minute, is that no one's played the same amount of games. And there's 3 in hand here or 2 they've played more there, which goes against it all. But Peterborough are up to second, just a point behind Rotherham, who have played 2 games less. Let's rattle on to Burton Albion. They're 2-2 with Oxford United. Nigel Clough, Burton manager, whose side conceded in stoppage time. Last night, we'll start on that. We'll start on the negatives first of all. How much is it a coach killer? What happened and coming back and them coming back and then the 2-2 in the end?
Devastating because of the manner in which it happened. Whenever you concede late on, it feels like a defeat. Yeah. And it certainly did last night. And we've done it too many times this season. And it's the reason why we're halfway down the league and not challenging for the top six at the moment. We've conceded too many late goals, and when you get to sort of mid-February, we should have eradicated those sorts of mistakes that were made last night.
A positive, though, Jamie Murphy. What impact has he had on this squad?
Oh, brilliant. When we heard that we might have a small chance of bringing him in, we just did everything we could to get him down here. I think he scored 3 in 5 now or something, and he's a game-changing player. He did the same at Sheffield United when we were there, and we're extremely lucky to have him in our squad in League One, because he's at least a Championship player, and he's proved that. But coming back from injury, he just wanted to come somewhere that he knew the people, and he was guaranteed to play. And say 17 months is a long time to be out, but he's back enjoying his football again and scoring goals, so that's brilliant. It'll set him up for next season wherever he goes.
So you don't think he'll stay with the club next season?
We would love him to, but I think he's got a year left at Rangers, and I think in this sort of form as well, I'm sure they'll be keeping an eye on him and thinking he can do a job for them. If not, I would think a Championship club at the very least.
Yeah, don't worry about that. I'm sure he was trending Rangers way last night on social media. Everyone was talking about him. That's the positive of the transfer window and what you've managed to do. Liam Boyce is kind of the other side of that, isn't he? I know you talked about the player holds all the aces and what you couldn't do. How much of a frustration was that, and him going and you not able to hang on to him?
We pretty much knew it would happen. If somebody came in with a reasonable offer when he's got 4 or 5 months left on his contract, then as a club and the financial position that we're in, then he was going to go. But it is frustrating. It's one of those of being a small club like Burton Albion in League One. And you know, our crowd last night is less than 3,000, and I think the majority of conference clubs get bigger crowds than us. So it just is just it's not a criticism. That's just the size of the club that we are. So it's a practical problem. You know, we don't have outside investment, so we live within our means, and the club has been very successful doing that for 25 years while the chairman's been here.
Yeah, I know, Ben, and you've both been quite open about that. You're transparent about that. But at what stage does that stop you being the manager you want to be? Is it inhibiting you now with what you want to do?
Yeah, because I think you ask every manager at any level, and they'd like another player or two and like to spend a little bit of money. And I know supporters would like that too. But you know, the realism of the situation is that we can't do that. So we get on. I think in our squad now, we've only got one player that's cost money for the club, and that's Lucas Akins, who cost about £20,000 8 years ago. So we have to work very hard with our academy. We have to work very hard with our recruitment, especially in the loan market, to be competitive at this level.
You've not hidden from the fact that you are ambitious. Does that mean that you're actively seeking a job elsewhere at this stage?
No, not actively seeking, but if one comes up, and you know, the chairman said all along, you know, he wouldn't stand in our way, and he's been brilliant over the years like that. But it's got to be, I think, a reasonable job to tempt us away from here, because we work with one of the best chairmen in the country, and we're allowed to get on and do our jobs and manage. And I think that's why Gary Rowett went on and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank went on, because when you start here, you're allowed to manage and to do your job.
Without doubt. But I guess the problem is you've got to wait for a club to come in and have a word about taking you, haven't you, if you're not actively seeking. So has that happened? Or if it hasn't, what do you think's stopping it?
No, I don't know. I think Sunderland made an inquiry when their vacancy came up a few months ago, but that didn't go anywhere in the end. I think they got Phil Parkinson in. So it would take, I think, a situation like that. And I think for other clubs maybe to recognise the situation in which we work in here, which is tough, you know, with the financial restrictions. But we keep trying to put good teams on the pitch that play football. It doesn't always work, I have to say. But we try and play good football. We try and get good, honest players on the pitch. And hopefully we'll see where that leads.
What's it going to take then to take that club back to the Championship? Is it more investment? Is it, you know, a bit of luck on your side?
Yeah, certainly a bit of that, to have a season where everybody stays fit, you know, you keep your squad intact and things like that. But the club may never make it back to the Championship. It was an absolute miracle that they got there in the first place and survived for a year. So it might never make it back. And even if we survive in League One, that is a success for the size of the club that we are. And, you know, the ground that we've got, you know, holds less than 7,000 people. It was built for the conference. Yeah. Maybe the dream of Football League one day. And then we find ourselves, you know, not many years later in the Championship. It was a really pinch yourself time. So it may never happen again. But the good thing is that the chairman will stick by his principles and keep running the club in the same way.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm the first to shout the sustainability model. It's exactly what clubs should do. But is that the only way that a club like Burton... I had this chat with Lee Johnson at Bristol City. We've seen Brentford do it. You have to go from that sort of selling club into a hanging on to your players club. There's a tipping point, isn't there, where you have to decide what you want to do?
That's it. And imagine the cup success, the difference that makes. Yeah. If you can have a run in the cup, then that, you know, getting knocked out in January to Northampton in the third round was a major financial blow to us. If we hadn't have been and we'd have gone on and got a draw and maybe got a TB or something, then it might have resulted in us hanging on to Liam Boyce and, you know, and doing a bit more business. That those sorts of things have got to go your way, I think, to make a difference for clubs like ourselves.
I just don't get it. I don't get why another club hasn't come in for you yet. I'm sure that will happen. This club, though, at the end of the season, where do you think you'll be?
In terms of league position?
Yeah.
I'd like to think we can get in the top half, and we're not too far off the top six. We actually got in it a few weeks ago, and since then I think we've drawn four. Only lost one, but we've had four draws, and we've been ahead in two of those games, and we should have won them. So we might find ourselves a little bit short, but all the time we're getting the young players' experience on the pitch. Last night there was a few playing, and that'll do them good for next season.
Nigel Clough then talking to us, quite open about the fact that he thinks Sunderland came in and had a word for him. That didn't work out, but also that he's not actively seeking employment elsewhere, but clearly he has ambitions still to be managing higher.
Yeah, and I think we all have ambitions to be the best that we can be. And
so why
I get
has it
that.
Not happened?
Why has it not happened? It's a good question. I think, have we seen a massive improvement at Burton? I like Nigel Clough, I rate him. Have they levelled out a little bit over the last few years? I haven't seen a huge improvement. He's had to sell players, of course. Mm. I think what might have held him back is what happened under the previous regime where Rowett did get them through the leagues on a tight budget and Hasselbank sort of finished the job. And because they did it once, maybe everybody expects them to do it again. I don't know. I think he's a really good manager, plays lovely football. My one minor criticism of Nigel down the years is that not always felt he's got a plan B. But no, look, I'm sure other clubs would be interested. If Sunderland were, that shows you the level he's operating at. But it's unusual, isn't it, for a gaffer in a job to be so open. So well done you, Caroline, for getting that out of him.
No, I guess it's the relationship he clearly has with Ben Robinson, yeah, isn't it? And then the openness and the transparency that they have equally with the fans. This is what we've got. This is our lot. This is what we're dealing with.
I think, give or take, he's done 16 years at Burton across two spells. So you have to have the trust of the owner and a good relationship. Wrongly or rightly, I think it's a little bit maybe snooty of owners elsewhere who think that potentially Nigel Clough's had his day and that this is maybe his ceiling now, that's his level. And it's about, you know, employing the likes of Lamouchi and people like that from other leagues and trying to play a nicer brand of football. That said, Burton, I think, do play a nice brand. They're quite set in that 4-3-3, but it's very nice on the eye. The midfield's always impressed me. And you're working a little bit with one arm behind your back. They've had to let Boyce go recently up to Hearts, and they've not really replaced him. They've got Kwame in, who I think was at Doncaster. Kwame Thomas, sorry. He was at Doncaster early part of this season, but it's not really a like-for-like change. So, yeah, you're not working with bundles of money. And we know he's done a terrific job in consolidating them at this level, considering they were non-league, you know, when he first started.
Burton sitting 12th then in League One. Of course, the other fixtures around, they face Ipswich, just outside those playoff positions at the moment. All these teams, actually, when we've seen where they were early on in the season, where they've dropped to and then bouncing around again, it's not really going to level out until they've all played the same.
No, they might fancy themselves at Burton at Ipswich. Ipswich not in sensational form, are they? Burton did
not
win.
Not great at home either.
Yeah, Burton did win at Sunderland. They won at Oxford. I think they drew at Fratton Park as well. So they've got the capability. Scott Fraser is one of the standouts for me as part of the left wingers, the left footers club. I'm a fan of his. He contributes some great goals, great assists with that left peg. So yeah, look, if Ipswich aren't on it, Burton have the the tools, don't they, to cause an upset there.
Is that also the same as how I like to see tall women do well because I'm part of the 6 foot club? It's exactly the same thing.
It might be.
Yeah, right out there.
I love nothing more than Right Said Fred churning out a good tune.
When was the last Right Said Fred good tune? Another discussion. So Ipswich, Burton, Portsmouth, Shrewsbury as well, one of the other key fixtures from the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, important for Portsmouth to get back going. Disappointment in that defeat last night. Talking about resting players, you gave Ellis Harrison a rest last night, who I think has been very good in recent weeks and been preferred to John Marquis as the number nine. I thought that was a slightly strange decision, but they've got an incredible run of games, Portsmouth, coming up. And they've played 11 games already this year, and it is Saturday, Tuesday until the end of March now. So those factors included, I think, into Kenny Jackett's argument. You can understand why he did that. Andy Cannon's been a big plus for them as well. He wasn't available last night. So very tight game, but the form that they've been in, the amount of goals they've been scoring from set pieces, I'm not going to be turned away from Portsmouth after one defeat against probably, in my mind, the best footballing team in the division, Coventry.
Yeah, I think they'll beat Shrewsbury. I mean, Shrewsbury, they're on a rotten run. They've not won since December the 21st. They did brilliantly last night, I thought, to have 21 shots on goal and none of them hit the target. Isn't that a remarkable stat? What an achievement. 21 shots and not one. Test the goalkeeper. It's absolutely mad, really. You can't fancy them because of the form, but also away from home. I looked at the stats. 9 of their away games, they've failed to score. That's a problem, isn't it? And yeah, they don't have a leading scorer, really. Cummings is their top marksman on 4 in the league. And you look at the creators, Wally has 4 assists. No one else has got more than 2. So you've got to look at the players at the top end of the pitch and say, have they delivered for Sam Ricketts? The answer's no. Ricketts himself, I think, is on edge. Some of the things he's coming out with in the media are questionable, maybe. And the fans, I did hear, were on his back last night when they lost to Accrington. So I'm not saying they're going to make a change, but I think Sam Ricketts is a bit rattled at the moment.
God, it's a hard job, isn't it, being a football manager. Portsmouth, Shrewsbury, Burton with the Ipswich game. Joe Critty, which way do they go?
You won't be surprised to hear that Portsmouth are favourites and odds on to beat Shrewsbury at 4-7. Shrewsbury a massive 5-1 to win and the draw 3-1. And Ipswich are odds on to beat Burton, surprisingly enough, just a shade below evens at 19-20, with Burton 29-10 and the draw 12-5.
And that caveat, I'll reiterate it, some playing 30, some playing 29, 32, 31, wherever you are, promotion odds too.
Yeah, it's mad. Every team seems to be in great form at the moment, certainly the ones that are pushing for the automatic spots in League One. Rotherham are odds on for promotion at 2-5, but then behind them, Portsmouth and Coventry are both even money. Peterborough, 6-4. Sunderland, a fraction of a point behind at 13-8 with Ipswich, who are probably looking for that last playoff spot, 4-1.
League One, you are done. League Two is you up next. Today's show is sponsored by The Athletic, a subscription-based sports news site for real fans. Through in-depth coverage from local writers on every team like Phil Hay and Nancy Frostick to national writers you already know like David Ornstein and Amy Lawrence, The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news. There are no ads, apart from this one, pop-ups or clickbait, just great sports writing that tells you the story behind the story. Exclusive player profiles, deep dives on analytics, team power rankings, and fantasy sport insights you won't find anywhere else. Each subscriber gets a personalised feed of stories, live writer Q&As, podcasts, and more. That's the writer being alive, not dead, but also live writer Q&As. Just download The Athletic app, pick your favourite teams. The Athletic will begin surfacing all the latest on the players and the storylines that should matter to you. Ready to get started? For 40% off a yearly subscription to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/league. That's theathletic.com/league for your 40% off in conjunction with us.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker.
League Two then, and the top four all picked up maximum points on Tuesday. Exeter 5-1 over Oldham, Crewe 2-1 over Crawley, Northampton 0, Swindon 1, Salford 2, Plymouth 3. But Colchester United lost to Ian Holloway's Grimsby. Elsewhere, Port Vale had two sent off, but FGR couldn't beat them. 3-2, that finished. In the battle to avoid the drop, Morecambe leapfrogged Macclesfield with a 2-0 win at the Globe Arena. Salford 2, Plymouth 3, Wilson equalising twice, but then it wasn't to be.
Yeah, it should prove to be a good signing. Been up at Aberdeen, I think, and not scoring with any regularity, but it's a player with unquestioned calibre, considering, you know, he came from Manchester United, and I'm sure he'll get goals. But, you know, that's a very good victory for Plymouth, considering they've had a big journey to Colchester and soundly beaten, well, thumped in the first half at the weekend. Sarcevic, by all accounts, magnificent with a brilliant goal. And an assist. He's got 10 now for the season. The Manchester Messi, according to the local papers last night, but been very important. And got to remember with Plymouth, they're doing all this without a really recognised front one or even front two. Jeffcott, the lad who's come back from non-league, as I was saying earlier about Swansea, you know, that's a big expectation and a lot of weight to carry for a young player to get the goal. So I think Dom Telford's back in training now. He should add to the options in that area. And the problem seems to have been defensively down the left-hand side for Plymouth. Certainly, Harriet had an absolute field day for Colchester at the weekend. And McFadden's back fit now, played left of the back three last night. And I think just solving that issue defensively for Plymouth is going to be encouraging moving forward. But I think we know with Plymouth, if you allow them to play, they can really hurt you. And I think Salford were guilty of that a little bit last night, you know, looking ahead to the weekend, in which is a huge game against Crewe.
Yeah, we'll get onto that one in just a minute. But you're right about the attitude to go to Colchester United, to get a bit of a stuffing and then to switch it around and go to Salford. Says a lot about there where they'll be come the end of the season, either whether they get automatic.
Yeah,
they've
got ability, but if you marry that ability with a good team ethic and spirit and resilience, then you've got the magic formula, haven't you? Did you see the goal from Charles Werner, the hat trick goal?
Yeah,
what a goal that was! I mean, it was a 70-yard run, would you say? I think it was 70. Talking about Messi, Werner was Messi like, and that was the goal to get his hat trick. I mean, this is a lad who was on loan at Chorley in November. Before Christmas, he was playing in the National League. So, quite remarkable, really, his turnaround, scoring plenty of goals. 5 in 8 appearances under Ian Holloway before Holloway took over, 5 in 57. So, decent turnaround for Mr. Werner. And Grimsby as a whole are just playing with more abandon, aren't they? 5 or 6 changes by Holloway for that game, and they still won it. 15 points from a possible 27 under the new gaffer. That is promotion form. And you have to cast your mind back to where Grimsby were before he took over. I think that they'd gone, and this is a stat I referenced on the show, 11 matches where they hadn't scored more than one. Yeah, they're scoring goals for fun now. So it's amazing, isn't it, the difference a change can make.
I was trying to think, hopefully Abby, the voice of God, can help me out with that. Someone actually tweeted us in to assess Holloway. Andrew, thank you, Abby. Andrew, who got in touch with us about that. How would you assess Ian Holloway so far at Grimsby?
Well, it's been about the goals, hasn't it? Getting a team that were very limp in attack going again. Scored 13 goals in the 8 games. Previously scored 13 in the 18 games before he took charge. So the numbers are there. We spoke, you know, in really good terms of the options Grimsby had early part of the season. Though some of those players, I think Ogbu's not even at the club anymore. So it's the players he's brought in as well. It's players like Hansen, who he's kind of revitalised. Billy Clark coming in as well. And obviously Werner, who Adrian just gave you some stats on, has really discovered some form under Ollie. But I think it's more than that, isn't it? I mean, we can get a little bit carried away about the personality of Ian Holloway and stuff like that, because he's a very good football manager, but he's really got that community going, hasn't he? And you just have to look at the numbers of the Grimsby fans that are travelling to the away games. It's unbelievable. The atmosphere, I think it was Bradford the other day, looked sensational, and the goals are going in. They've got a real away following, and that's the potential of that club in that area.
When I played back in the late 90s at that level, Grimsby was always one of the hardest places to go. It was always a really, really tough ground, tough away trip. The atmosphere was always really loud. So, no, he's tapped into something for sure.
Yeah, got them back out there. Oldham, Forest Green Rovers and Plymouth Crew, the two fixtures to have a little look ahead to this weekend.
Yeah, well, yeah, Sam's talked about Plymouth. I think it's a great game, isn't it? Plymouth at home to Crew. Cast your mind back to the opening weekend. Crew 0, Plymouth 3. It was quite the start for the Southwest side. So there'll be a bit of revenge in the air. What I like about Crew, there's a lot to like about Crew, the fast football. But it's
not the place. No.
Well, it's a good, yeah. I mean, it's a very well known pit stop, isn't it? On Journeys North.
Very nice couple of hours spent in Crewe.
Have you? I never played at Crewe, as it happens. I'm just thinking about it.
Well, maybe come out of retirement just for that.
Don't bother covering a game there because it's about 200 foot in the air all the way to the radio gantry, Adrian.
High stand.
Swear that one. A good fish and chips, though, mate.
There's a great chippy opposite the train station.
There he is.
Good knowledge. Love it. I'm always on the train to Crewe, but I get off halfway there. I'll tell you what I like about him is that it's their way. They didn't change it for the opponents. It's always 4-3-3. It's always fast football, good movement. Charlie Kirk, who I don't think we probably give enough love to, 13 assists this season. That's incredible, isn't it? And he's chipped in with 6 goals as well. He, I think, typifies their style of play, a real quick player that moves the ball really smoothly. And yeah, they're great to watch. And it should be, for sure, the game of the weekend in League Two.
I'm going to give you 2 lines.
Mm. Go on.
It's going to be a brilliant game because, like I just said about Plymouth, if they're afforded the luxury to play a little bit, they're very expansive. And we know Crew are very good playing between the lines, got some very talented players. Ryan Hardy, 7 appearances for Plymouth Argyle. 4 of them as substitute, 3 starters. In the 4 games he's come on in, he scored 4 goals.
So, do you start him on the bench or start him on the pitch?
Bring him on for 20 minutes.
Having picked up Crew, by the way, they haven't beaten anyone away from home in the top half. So that there is like that missing link for them against the best teams on the road. Are they a bit of a soft touch? Maybe. Mm. But I think this will be a good football match and that will suit them.
He doesn't like being outstated by you, does he?
No, I'm not having it.
He doesn't like it. Yours was the best stat, Sam.
It was good, wasn't it? Love that, mate.
Ah, 1 killer stat from Oldham, Forest Green Rovers. And the reason we're not spending a lot of time on this, which sounds daft, but I do want to go in depth on Oldham. I only saw David Conn's piece in The Guardian about them lurching towards another crisis. 6 changes in manager from the start of the 2018-19 season to now. 6. We will hopefully next week have a much more in-depth look at Oldham, but just briefly on this game.
I'm glad you did that, because it's exactly what I was going to reference, but I think David Conn is probably better at describing
it
than me. Yeah, I mean, going into a crisis, it's been a crisis for a number of years at that club. Dino Marmaria blaming the pitch last night at Exeter for that 5-1 reverse when his centre-half, David Wheater, was sent off early on in that game. I think the players have to take a bit of responsibility and the manager at the moment. And this is off the back of a pretty good run. I think they went 6 unbeaten. They thumped a couple of teams, Bradford included, at Boundary Park. In Johnny Smith, they've got a very good loanee from Bristol City. He's got 10 goals now. Things were looking pretty good. And yes, it's Crew that they've lost at, and it's Exeter that they've lost at. But he went back to a 4-5-1 in both of these games after playing 4-4-2 and preaching that this was the way forward. And the goalkeeper, De La Paz, who's it's his second spell at the club, all over the place last night. And he's a young 18-year-old on the bench, but I think this has been happening over the last few weeks. So no real trust in the goalkeeper. Wheat is going to be suspended now. And I look at the team and they don't really have an out-and-out centre-forward. So when you're playing against Crew and you're playing against Exeter, more so against Crew, and you're coming under increasing pressure against one of the top sides in the division, you need an outlet. They've got too many number 10s who want to come towards the ball, and that's a big problem when you're playing away from home under the cosh.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, both teams need to win. Forest Green, just glad to get away from their home pitch, aren't they? 5 home losses in a row. Defending really poorly. Mark Cooper's getting very stressed out. I think he's under pressure. I think he will lose this game, and I'm not saying that they're going to look to make the change, but But he's one of those gaffers that I think is starting to look over his shoulder. I don't know what's gone wrong. I don't see them every week, but I look at the number of loan players they've had and got. They've had 8 loan signings this season. You can only obviously use a certain amount on a match day squad. It's too many, in my opinion. It is too many because most loan players don't fully invest in the team. They're there for themselves, really, in their own development. Sometimes it's different, but to have so many that don't belong to you, I don't think is entirely healthy. So, difficult times for them.
Welcome to my world. I think we've had about 52 loanees at Chelmsford this season, but that's another story. Odds then on promotion, Miami Joe.
Sam will be pleased to hear that Swindon are 1-9 for promotion now. Crewe 2-9, Plymouth 4-11. So all odds on for those sides there. Exeter 2-5 as well. Colchester 5-2, Cheltenham 3-1, Northampton 4-1, Bradford 7-1. So all very tight in the betting there for the teams from fifth down.
And those couple of games then, looking ahead to this weekend, Oldham Forest Green, Plymouth Crewe.
Forest Green favourites to win away 6-4, Oldham 9-5 for the win with the draw 2-1, and Plymouth are slight favourites to win this one 29-20 against Crewe, who are 17-10 with the draw 5-2.
Thank you, Joe, my Miami Vice, although that sounds wrong if your girlfriend's listening.
She won't be.
No. Good, then he is my Miami Vice. That's all from us until next week when the EFL will carry on. Sam, thank you. Adrian, thank you. Joe and your wonderful girlfriend, thank you again. Listeners, thank you. We'll speak again soon. Just end it, Abby. Just end it.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Slaven, host of the Totally Scottish Football Show. And if you like football, you're gonna love Scottish football. It's not all just Stevie G and Scott Brown up here. No, because we talk about all of the Scottish football, and geez, oh, it's great. There's actually a title race this year in the Premiership. Stevie G will be hoping not to slip up again. Hearts are tearing each other a new one. Motherwell are doing well, they're doing well. So, if you like your football to be competitive, have a title race and a ton of drama off and on the pitch, the Totally Scottish Football Show is most definitely for you. Grab Scottish football by the balls, just like Ryan Christie did, and listen to the Totally Scottish Football Show, available everywhere, even in England.
Muddy Knees Media.